Welcome back, everyone, for the second hour of Narsil in Action. Thank you very much for joining us for hour two. And this hour is going to be what we had originally intended the entire program to be about, registration scams. And it's not just registration scams, there are scams of all types. The internet has done wonders for the possibilities for people to be taken advantage of, the evolution of technology. So we're going to try to do a free-form hour tonight with this second hour. And we have Lori Hamilton from Oklahoma. Hi, Lori.
Hello.
Glad you could join us this evening.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we're hopefully going to have some callers as well for this segment. We have our communications director from Narsil, Sandy. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Larry.
Thank you for joining us. And we have a person, I don't know if he wants his name. I unmuted him from Oklahoma. I'm going to give you a shot here. Do you hear of what? I don't know how to introduce him because I didn't call him, but it's your person, Lori. I unmuted him.
Okay.
I'd like for him to say hi. Your phone number ends in 7051. Let me unmute him again. It looks like he's somehow gotten muted.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Are you here from Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Okay. If you're in a quiet background, now if we start hearing lots of distraction, I'll start muting the people that are making the noise. So we're going to talk about, I don't like to hear chainsaws and jackhammers and diving boards and rock concerts and stuff. It makes it difficult for other people to get the benefit of the call. There are so many of these things happening around the country. Even a friend of mine who has never been in trouble with the law here in New Mexico received a phone call saying that she needed to come in and take care of a warrant. And she's fairly sophisticated, and she said, well, I choose to let you guys come out and pick me up, and they haven't picked her up yet. But unfortunately, the stress of the life on the sex offender registry is so enormous, and the consequences are so horrendous if you truly were in a technical violation, and the most minuscule violation can put you over the edge. People get these phone calls at odd hours, and it's an average game in terms of they're calling hundreds and thousands of people, and you hit somebody who's had a bad day or a sick child or they just lost their job or something bad, and people react in a way that is not rational, but that's just the way it is. We think, well, I would never do that. I hope I would never do that, but we never know when we get caught in a vulnerable moment what would happen. So, Lori, what type of call is going around? The one in New Mexico that a friend got, it was just a general warrant. They told her that she needed to take care of and she needed to pay them so that she wouldn't be arrested. She said, I choose to be arrested. What's the flavor of the calls that you're aware of? And then we'll talk a little bit about the investigation that you've conducted. What's happening over in Oklahoma?
Okay, the call that you kind of mentioned that your friend has undergone, we've actually had some of that here in Oklahoma. It's not exactly directed towards sex offenders. The area code that we've been seeing that number come from is a 605, which is, I believe, North Dakota. But that particular call, I have actually been able to obtain an audio on, which I believe I shared with Narsil. That was just kind of the general one, and I think that's maybe the one that you're referring to. The other calls they vary. We've had guys being told they had warrants, they needed to come down and pay, or they were going to be arrested. We've had guys that have been told, we haven't received your registration paperwork, you need to come down and fill an affidavit out that you haven't received your paperwork so you can come down and register, and then they've asked them for money. And then the gentleman that's on, his situation was a little different. But these, we have currently have four different counties that are involved in working on some of these cases, and they're at least two of the major counties that are in Oklahoma. So that's encouraging.
I do have the audio.
And when you say working, would you?
Pardon me?
Yeah, we're going to get to the audio in just a second. Thank you, Andy. So when you say working on it, tell us what you did to be able to give them a lead, the mistake that the scammer made and how that led you towards an actual phone number.
Okay. I get calls quite often from guys telling me they've gotten this type of a call. And I'll say, first thing I want to know is what's the phone number. Sometimes they can give it to me. Sometimes they can't. I try to find them. I believe that a lot of these numbers are being, you know, computer generated, and that's why we're not able to actually attach them to someone. But the gentleman who's going to talk here in a moment had given me a phone number that he'd received a call from. And when I called it back, because he said he had called it back and gotten some different voicemail extensions, but when I called it, it actually went to the person's cell phone and listed his phone number, and I was able to find that individual to attach that number to that individual. So there's currently scams that have happened in four different counties involving that phone number, and so that's
like,
why.
When you called it back, you got a recorded message or an automated that said you have reached.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So you.
Well,
so
I got a different message from what she got. What I got was it was basically set up as if it was a county sheriff, so it was very real, and I mean it was very scary for me and my children. And it basically had directions on where to go. You know, if you are calling in regards to the sex offender registry, you hit this number. And then when you would go to it, it would say, just leave a message. So I knew at that point, me and my lawyer, and Lori knew that it was a scam.
So you actually called back and got an attempt to disguise as law enforcement. They had set up enough, for lack of better words, a platform to pretend to replicate law enforcement.
Yes. Yeah, it's very scary.
I called late at night, so I think that he probably shut off the system and you know, ended up having, you know, just he redirected his phone calls and failed to not include his private information. So I think that's why I might have gotten a different response than when Cameron made.
So he shut down the sheriff's department at a certain hour.
Yes, that's what I think.
Well, we've got that call, and that particular phone call is troubling. Andy, why don't you go ahead and if you got a good soundbite on that, play that one of the calls that you have in the queue, and see how it compares to what others might talk about later.
All right, I hope this comes over well.
Criminal Investigation Department of Iowa. What can I do for you today?
I'm so sorry, I didn't catch that.
You have reached Criminal Investigation Department of IRS. And right now you're talking with Officer David Scott.
Okay, and what is it that you do?
We are an investigation of federal tax.
I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you. You said private investigation?
Yes. We are from Criminal Investigation Department of IRS.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a private investigator. Do you have cases in Oklahoma?
Yes, we have.
And do you need assistance with those?
Sorry?
You need assistance with those?
Sorry.
That phone call is hysterical.
I was trying to get him to say stuff. This is a known scam. I have seen some officers that have actually posted that this guy calling and using the name David Cook is what they're saying. He is difficult to hear, but in the background, you can tell that there are other callers in the background. At least on my recording, you can hear this. It sounds like a call center.
It sounds like a call center in a third world country, though.
Yeah, it does. It sounds. But
that's
but,
what
but
I think.
But people in America, you deal with so many foreign-based call centers that would not necessarily, in and of itself, Well,
no.
When you call your credit card company, you often get the same thing. Or you call tech support, you often get the same thing.
And it was a U.S. area code.
That's not hard to do.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Now, my call was nothing like that. He was a he sounded like a cop. He was an American. I mean, he was, you know, he sounded like he was maybe African American descent. You know, he led me to believe. I believed when he first answered the phone that he was a sheriff cop. I mean, there was no accent whatsoever. And he was very good. He had my daughter in tears because, I mean, my phone, I always put it on speaker. And he had
Your daughter was afraid you were going to be hauled away to jail.
All five of my kids did.
He told him that they were going to come get his children.
Mm-hmm. Take them to DHS.
So we don't normally read stuff that's just not good form, but we're going to do a break from tradition. We're going to read about a 2.5-minute statement from a person in Maryland that couldn't be here, and we've tried to reduce it down from his story, but this is a story where a person actually went down and tried to pay his way out of the trouble, and we don't want you guys to do that. So that's the reason why we're going to ask you to bear with us and let us do something we don't normally do. Sandy, would you be kind enough to read the condensed version of his story?
Yes, I will. Is my voice at a satisfactory level?
You sound fantastic.
All right. This is a gentleman from Maryland. On June 5th, around 10 p.m., I got a phone call. A man identified himself as a police officer, gave me his name and badge number, said that he knew I was on the registry, and asked me when I had last updated my contact information. I said I was compliant and on schedule. He said I was out of compliance, that I had lapsed, and that the federal requirement was now every 3 months. The man asked if he should issue a warrant or if I would prefer to handle the matter as a civil offense. I, of course, asked to resolve it civilly. He told me the call was being recorded. He said I needed to come down to the sheriff's office immediately and post an $1,800 bond or suitable third-party vouchers. I followed his directions to call him back on my mobile phone. He said I was now a fugitive and that if I broke communication, he would issue the warrant for my arrest. He said the important thing was to follow his directions. As I drove, my caller had me read out my mileage, give time estimates for spots on my trip, and say something every 5 minutes about what cross street I was at. He told me to drive to Walmart and buy a dozen $100 Apple iTunes gift cards. I didn't have that much money, so keeping him on the phone, I instead drove back home and dialed 911 from the landline. I asked for emergency child protective services and said that I was expecting to be arrested and that I had children at home that should not be left unattended. The operator said that she would send an officer. My caller was on the line the whole time, and he said that I had just made a really bad mistake. I was on the phone with him until a very young police officer showed up, who directed me to hang up the phone. That police officer assured me that the whole thing was just a scam and that there was no warrant issued. I asked if I could file a report, and he said no. Before I could call the registry office the next morning to be sure I was really okay, a different man called me, saying basically the same thing, that I was out of compliance and I could settle the matter civilly or criminally. I told him the whole story from the night before. He said that officer, as well as the policeman responding to my 911 call, did not do their jobs and that I needed to do what he said. The preliminaries of the call were the same. I was directed to get the iTunes gift cards. He promised that as long as I was compliant, I would not be arrested. As before, I was instructed to record mileage and to keep an open line of communication. I went to Walmart and bought as many gift cards as I had money for. He wanted pictures taken of them and sent to him, but I didn't know how to do that. He then told me to read off the numbers to him, and by then I was very suspicious and began driving to the sheriff's office. I told him that I would meet him there. Then he started yelling and telling me what a terrible pervert I am. He threatened to come to my house and rape my daughter and kill my mother-in-law. I hung up and called 911. I went to the sheriff's office to file a complaint, but they would not let me. And that's the end of his statement.
Now that is really, thank you, Sandy. That is really troubling that mm-hmm. you can impersonate an officer. You can put people in fear of their life. You can extort $1,200 or whatever the amount was he actually paid, and they tell you that you cannot file a report. Mr. Alexander, does that sound like what you would be told in the state of Louisiana if this had happened? Did we lose King?
He never unmuted himself.
Okay, well then that's all right. We'll go on and when he gets back. But yeah, that's very troubling. Because everybody should be able to file when they're a victim of a crime, a police report, I would think. Now we saw from the podcast, I think we commended a police agency in Maine that's taken it very seriously.
Right.
Lori, how seriously do you think they're taking it in Oklahoma in terms of, or is this a real investigation or are they placating you guys?
It's a real investigation, and we had a very similar to that gentleman's call in one of our counties, and they did take the police report.
Well, if King unmutes himself, I'd like to find out this person that wrote this ought to be able to get some sort. I mean, he ultimately recovered his money from Walmart, and they were able to cancel the cards he had purchased. But how many people didn't get their cards canceled, and how many people were victimized? Andy, did you have anything? Because I'm looking for one more caller that I can't find from Maryland that was going to. So if the Maryland caller, Stuart, is here, please press *6 so we can find you, because I can't find you on this busy board.
Well, I'm kind of a tech junkie, and I know that it's not difficult. It's not. You know, it's not something you just run by every day, that you can set up to where you can make a phone call look like it came from kind of anywhere. It seems like someone could put together a fairly convincing operation that would make it look like it came from your local sheriff's office. If they have some sort of the names and they can talk the lingo, the whole part of that particular story that Sandy read that would throw me is, how are you going to go down to the local Walmart and buy $1,000 worth of gift cards? That would send up all of the red flags, to me at least. But up until that, it seems very plausible.
Well, unfortunately, he's not here. On the second go around, when the police had dispatched and told him it was okay, that it was bull, then he continues to go down the road. That's a little bit troubling. But there again, you don't know what's going on in his life. And if he's got children and he's trying to protect, most people do anything for their kids.
Yes.
I would like to think that I wouldn't do that, but I just don't know. But apparently he did. He continued to take part of the scam even after the law enforcement intervened. But when they tell you they won't take a report, you may have some dubiosity about whether they're really trying to help you.
Yeah, how would that kick in from what your rights are, even though you're a registrant? How does that kick in for your rights and your protections?
Well, there would be no difference. A crime victim is a crime victim is a crime victim. They're supposed to take a crime. If you want to file a police report, my understanding is that anybody who's a victim, the fact you're on the registry should have no bearing on your victimization status. I mean, in reality, it would, because the prosecutor's going to work a lot harder for somebody who's not a convicted criminal, particularly on the sex offender registry. But as far as the police are concerned, their duty is to investigate criminality. That there's a whole plethora of crimes that was in that story.
They don't care about you. They do not care about you. They don't care about you if you're a single father with five kids and your victim was your wife who ran off. They don't care. You're a sex offender. And if you help a sex offender, the status quo of American society wants nothing to do with you. You are a sick pervert, no matter how small your crime was. You can be victimized, beat up. It doesn't matter. You are not going to get the same protection as everybody else. I have realized this. My children have realized this. My children have been going through the most craziest amounts of bullying and just fear-mongering from not only that, but our own police department. I mean, they do not care about me or my children. We know this. I've been through hell and back with this stuff here, especially recent, and I've been a registrant for 18 years. And I have all my children on my own, and you would think that that would matter. I'm doing everything on my own, but the police does not put us in the same category as a normal or a civilian, period. We are not looked at in that manner.
So I'm gonna go to a few of our affiliate leaders and take them. I'm gonna unmute them and see if they have anything, and then we're gonna take general calls. So Connecticut, you're on the Northland in Action. Yeah, what's going on in Connecticut? Anything like this?
A couple comments. One is that recently I had my wallet stolen in April, and I was told I had to go to the police station, which was about 50 minutes away, to place a report. And I got there, and I don't know if it's apathy or what, but they could care less. The guy didn't even write a report. I asked him for a case number. He didn't. It was just an exercise in futility.
Do you have any of these scams in your state that you've been made aware of?
We've had 5 calls that I know of. One of them, I'm very close to the gentleman. I don't know he's on the call tonight, but that was that convoluted story where bizarre. The person's victim, quote unquote, was a family member. And so the call went to the family member saying he was in trouble. And so she believed that he was in trouble and had his cell phone. And so then he got the scam call. And it did come from the department in Middletown that keeps it manages the registry. And so it was very bizarre. I don't know about the 4 other callers. I've also had a couple guys, one who's been threatened in the mail that he was going to be killed by an anonymous person, and he would get increasing letters of violence every 3 weeks. And he went to the police department, and they could care less, didn't fill out a report. And then I had someone else who was being stalked by an ex-prisoner cellmate, and very, very, I've got letters to prove it, and the police could care less. So that's all I've got. I mean, my one and only caller that I've talked to, I encouraged to go fill out a police report, but he didn't. And it's a couple, 2-3 weeks later now. But I get it. Like, I wish he did go and fill out a report, but I'm not sure what good it would have done.
So, well, thank you. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you very much. I'm going to mute you right now. And we're going to balance that with a guest that's going to be on in the next segment. But I don't want to just be bashing on law enforcement, because the department in Maine, who had made it a very high priority, and then we've got Paul, who's going to be on in hour 3, has had an experience as a victim of a crime. So welcome to the second hour of Northland Action. Tell us what your experience was as a crime victim as compared to the stories we're hearing about they don't care. What was your experience with Dallas PD? Paul? We've lost Paul.
I was mute and I was talking away.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, yes. Yeah, what was your experience with Dallas police?
Sure. In 2010, I made my first call, got out. I was in a halfway house. And I left the halfway house and was able to rent a house next door. And the halfway house had some SOs and some other people. They avoided aggravated people and people with assault convictions. But there was one gentleman who actually, when he wasn't on drugs, he was great. But he had a couple assault convictions, and the halfway house was trying to help him out. But anyway, he was on parole. He skipped out. I had moved into a house, and someone else who was very well-off individual rent a room. And this individual, he got back on drugs. He was selling drugs. And anyway, he broke into my house. And I just wasn't prepared for it because I'd never experienced anything like that. And it just kind of shocked me. And he tried to get away with a safe, and he stole a few other things. He didn't get a lot, but I felt really violated. And I wasn't sure exactly who it was at first, so I called the police. And the police showed up. They were very respectful. They took a full report. They understood the neighborhood because there was a halfway house real close to where I was renting, and they already suspected it might have been associated with that. And then they interviewed the halfway house, and they already suspected who the individual was. And the police, about 4 days, 4 days later, came back, returned some of my items, or said they had some items that might have been mine. I could go and claim them. And they said they expected they knew who it was. And because I knew the guy, I chose not to prosecute. The police were kind of miffed at me for not doing that. But they were fully supportive. They said, you know, we don't want crime. They didn't care about my status. And the PD was very respectful to me. So, you know, we can be treated really badly, but sometimes we can be treated with respect. So that's just my experience.
So thank you. Thank you, Paul. We'll be back to you in the next hour. I'm going to put you back on silence. Okay. Unfortunately, the other person from Maryland has not materialized, so we are going to see if any of our panel has any more questions, and we're going to take questions from Andy, do you have anything? Brenda, Robin? Brenda, I know this is a couple of these people from your state, so if you're in a quiet area and you want to expand on what's been said from Maryland, go ahead.
Well,
we've lost Brenda. She's muted.
The only thing, so one of our Patreon supporters sent me a URL to something called SpoofCard, and they even let you like try it out for free. I think the website's just spoofcard.com, and you can make a trial phone call and use any phone number you want. There must be something.
You can make any number come up you want. Yep.
But so with that, then you could, with enough money and enough of an operation, you could make it look like the call came from the White House, perhaps.
You could put that. And the funny thing about spoof is, like if you use the main switchboard for a hotel, it'll put that name on the ID line for those who have the name of the incoming caller. So it'll say Best Western Hotel, even though you're not calling from the Best Western if you put in that number. So I haven't tried spoofing law enforcement, but I would imagine it might do the same thing.
Hey, Larry, this is Brenda. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
We can hear you now, Brenda.
Yeah, I had myself muted because I'm tending to be in a noisy spot. Stuart from Maryland did say he was going to try to get on, so maybe he'll get in by the time the questions are done, but he was trying to log in. So just letting you know. So rather than tell his story, I'm hoping he'll still get on.
Sure thing. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
So,
Larry, can you hear me? This is Tim.
Tim, yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to say in Michigan, we've had a couple of cases that we're aware of, and we have set up at the ACLU a line for people to report them, and I can give you that number if you want it. That's for Michigan cases, and we've also recommended that they report it to not only their local police, but the Attorney General's Office, Consumer Protection Division. We know that some of those police, and maybe not always the Consumer Affairs Division will take the report. They take them online. But we are recommending that. And basically, we're trying to put the word out through our different chapters here in Michigan that we have this line set up. And again, if you want me to give the number, I can, but that's up to you, Larry.
So, we've got a number of people from Michigan, so please go ahead. There's more people from Michigan probably than any other state right now, so go ahead.
Okay. The Michigan phone number to report that is, and that'll be the ACLU number. You'll hear my voice on there. It's 517-372-8503, and that'll be the general number for the Lansing office, and then it'll direct you how to leave messages if you have been a member or scammed, or you actually, we take calls on other things too, but that is the number we've established for that. And then also, if they are a member of the Coalition for a Useful Registry, they were just advised how to get inside information on that same phone number. There's actually a private line that they go to and find out what's happening with our cases, or also what's happening with other scams that may be taking place in the state of Michigan that we're aware of. So we're trying to educate people is what we're trying to do.
And that's the team effort, what we're trying to do. In fact, we invited the other national organizations to join this conference call and to team up. This is something where there should be unanimity among the organizations in trying to get information out and trying to stop this. And they're not here with us, but hopefully they're doing their own thing to try to get the word out.
Does anybody sort of indication as to how many people are being called, and maybe how many are being suckered into it?
Is that a question for me in Michigan? I'm sorry.
No, it's just,
I don't think
just,
there's
I'm
any way to know that. But yeah, I don't think there's any way to know it. But if anybody has any input on that.
I have no input from Michigan other than the fact that we're, you know, We do get some calls, but nothing on any great numbers.
So we do have our other person from Michigan, so we're going to go ahead. And we have done no prep on this, so I'm going to go to Stuart Levy, who's given me permission to use his name. He's on the board of directors of Families Advocating at Township Registries, I do believe, which is the state group. And we've worked together a little bit, and I think we've kind of know each other. We'd like to hear a little bit about your scam experience. So welcome to the call, Stuart. You're free to tell a condensed story, a version of what happened to you.
All right, great. Thanks, Larry. Sorry, I'm a few minutes late here. It was very interesting. I got a call, and I'm in Howard County, Maryland. And the caller ID was from an area in Baltimore County, Maryland. And when I answered the phone, they identified themselves as Howard County sheriffs. So I immediately suspected that there was something not right with the call. But I have to tell you, when these guys call, they represent themselves. They are very, very rehearsed. And they're very professional, and they'll call and they'll tell you that they're calling from the sheriff's department and Judge so-and-so has just issued a warrant for your arrest for failing to register or some other kind of charge. And there are two ways that they can handle it. One is they can send the sheriff out to your house and arrest you, and that is the criminal way that they can handle it. Or they can handle it in a civil way, a play on words, I think, where you can pay them, and they will take care of the whole thing. So be assured that there is no legitimate law enforcement department or county or any legitimate type of organization that is going to mix criminal and civil actions with one result. It's either criminal or it's civil. You can't use a civil action to resolve a criminal complaint. And they are not going to have you go to your local 7-Eleven and send them $300 or $400 per charge in whatever kind of money order, or however they do that. I did not let it go that far. I actually hung up on the guy, and they called back. And when they called back, now it was Lieutenant so-and-so. And he says, I understand that you talked to one of my sheriffs and you hung up on him, and I just want to let you know, reiterate the seriousness of this situation, and that we really don't want to come and arrest you. We would prefer to take care of it civilly, and we are sure that that's how you want to handle it also. And they started asking personal information. So they asked my address. And I say, look, you're the sheriff's department. Don't you know where I am?
Yeah.
And eventually he got flustered and he goes, well, I'll just send a sheriff out. And he hung up. So there was another friend of mine who called me since I'm on the board of directors, and he reported the same thing happened to him. And he was ready to go and get the money. So fortunately, he didn't. He called the sheriff's department, which is what I did also. So after I got the call, my wife was here. She was all upset. I said, okay, I'll call to Howard County. I called the sheriff's department. They were closed because it was after hours. So I called the police department. I said, look, I just got this call. Can you run a records check just to, you know, satisfy my wife? And they sent me the records. They ran the check. Of course, there was nothing. Then I called the sheriff's department back and left a message. Now, because I had a working phone number, they left the phone number for me to call. And I called it, and it was an out-of-county number, but they answered the phone, Howard County Sheriff's Department, on their voicemail. So I said, well, maybe this is some kind of information that they might want. So I called the sheriff's department. They said that they can't handle criminal complaints. They're glad that I called them and that I should call the police department. I called the police department, Howard County Police, and I talked to the desk person for about 15 minutes. And he had less than any kind of interest. Actually, I guess he just wanted to get me off the phone, really. He said, well, and he actually told me that there was no crime that was committed, which, you know, calling someone representing yourself as a sheriff, I felt that was maybe a criminal offense in itself, but apparently the Howard County Police did not. So I called the sheriff's department back, talked to a different person. They gave me the number of the Howard County detective in the police department who was handling these kind of calls, left a message with her. She never returned my call. So all we can do that I can see is to just let ourselves know that these are going on, and please, please, please don't pay any money to anybody, regardless of how professional they sound. And they will scare you. They scared me, and I knew it was fake. So they will frighten you and they will challenge you, but please do not pay anyone anything over the phone. If it's legitimate, they're just going to send the sheriff out. They're not going to call and ask for money so they don't have to do whatever it is they're supposed to do. So I don't know. Does that help, Larry, a little bit?
It very, very much helps, because yeah, I know that you, with your sophistication level, that, and that's what I'm telling people. You sophisticated people. I mean, Bernie Madoff with a lot of money, and he didn't get it from people who worked at McDonald's. He got the money from very sophisticated people. So don't believe that just because you're sophisticated that this cannot happen, that this scam cannot catch you at a vulnerable moment. It's tragic, but people have things in their life that are going on that causes them to do irrational things.
Right.
Thank you, Stuart. I think
anybody have any questions about that, I previously have a law enforcement background as well, and I'm telling you, it the call actually frightened me. I mean, my pulse rate went up. I was shaking. I knew it was fake, but they were so good.
How much money did they want you to pay to work this thing out civilly?
I didn't get that far because I wouldn't give them information, so they hung up on me. The friend wanted $300 for a charge, and he had three charges that they bogusly made up. So he was going to send them $900 or $1,200 or something. So it ranges from, you know, a couple hundred dollars a charge. I don't know exactly.
Well,
this is King. I think I'm on now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. We heard you tearing your house down, King. did you have something to add before we take a few calls, King?
Well, I had a very similar experience to what the gentleman just said, and it was someone calling up and claiming. I'm trying to remember that sometimes these scammers are calling about past due taxes. They claim we had a very convincing one call here, claiming to be with the Criminal Enforcement Division of the Federal Internal Revenue Service, and very, very convincing and scary. And it comes up on the caller ID of something that seems official. They had terrified my wife with that. And I came back and looked up the number. And there are some, you can search the number and end up finding very useful bulletin boards of people who've had the same experience. I think one of the ones we got was to the effect of someone, you know, we know that you have ordered scheduled drugs over the internet, and, you know, we're going to prosecute you for that, but you can pay us now over the phone. And, you know, I'm an attorney, and that I recognize that as a scam, but they are very convincing. But, you know, it can be frightening when someone comes home with that much authority, and I have had exactly that kind of thing. But I knew it was a scam. I've learned to recognize that, and I can give as good as they can. So they didn't get anywhere. But I've had to tell many people who have contacted me about such things that is a scam. Do not give them any money. And as far as law enforcement, it's interesting that they would not allow a complaint to be made even when someone had been put through so much. That's really unacceptable to me, and I tend to refuse to accept the unacceptable, and I guess that's why I've been, you know, given a Trustees of Freedom Award by the Criminal Defense Bar in Louisiana. They put up that barrier for it, but you can go and make an affidavit, and you can mail it into the Law Enforcement Agency Investigations by return receipt, and you can copy it to the State Attorney General, the Criminal Division, and the Consumer Protection Division. Probably still nothing will happen, but it might give you a little more satisfaction that you made somebody receive what you had to say.
So, well, thank you, King. We're gonna try to switch to a few questions, and audience, it's going to be a little bit of a tricky handoff because we don't have all the fancy equipment of the regular broadcast studio, so we're using free platforms. And as I switch from lecture mode to Q&A, everybody who ever got on the panel now gets muted, and we have to go find them one at a time to get them unmuted. So at this point, I'm going to switch, and it'll put me on silence, and it'll put Andy on silence, it'll put the live stream on silence, and it'll take us a minute or so to get everybody back. So at this point, I'm going to switch to questions, and we're going to ask you, once you hear that you can press *6 if you have any questions.
Q&A session has started. To ask your question, please press *6, unmuted.
So the live stream is back. And so, yeah, if you have any questions, be sure to press *6. And if you're in the live stream, you can toss over some questions if you would like to as well.
And Larry's back.
Yay, Larry's back. You can switch over to the headset, Larry, if you want to.
You think it's all cleared up now?
I know it is.
All right. I'll be happy to do that. Yes, and I'll find the other callers. And if anybody has a question, *6. We will get to you as many as we can. This hour will end shortly, and then we'll be to the big event, the main event, which is International Megan's Law.
I have made the switch.
You're back?
I have made the switch. Am I broadcasting?
You are.
All right. So I can hang that regular phone up.
Yes.
Thank you.
The old tech.
Out with the old and in with the new. All right. So, the queue has begun to fill up, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take the first caller and the panel. You are coming back, but I'm just going to try to minimize the delay here. So we are going to. You're on Narsil in Action. Go ahead.
Okay, so my question is, I'm calling from the state of Florida, and we're talking about scams, and I'm kind of in researching an attorney's office by the name Estes Hightower, PLLC, and they're out of Texas, but they're petitioning registered sex offenders in the state of Florida, stating that they will be filing a class action lawsuit in the federal court because of the ex post facto laws or something to that effect. Just wanted to see if anyone else has any information on this Estes Hightower attorney's office.
That's really not on point, but I'll go ahead and answer the question. She is a licensed attorney in the state of Texas, and that is she is authorized by the rules in most states to do direct mail solicitations. You can do your own due diligence in terms of the validity of that appeal if you want to retain the services of that firm. I'm not going to say it's a scam. I believe it's within the rules of professional conduct to do direct mail marketing. And each state's registry is different. So what might be vulnerable to a good challenge in one state is not necessarily a good challenge in another. And I'm going to go ahead and put you back on mute and see if he wants to add anything to what I've said.
Well, I can say that the states, every state also regulates its attorneys differently. I know in Louisiana, direct mail has to be approved in advance by the state bar before an attorney can use it to seek clients. As far as the structure of the class action, I've heard that this particular attorney requests a certain amount of money from each person to get involved in the thing. I've looked them up online, and they're in business. I mean, they're licensed attorneys, and that's about as far as I can say.
Thank you, King. And like I said, it was really off topic, so we're going to move on to the next person. You're on Arsenal in Action.
Good evening. My name is Jack from Connecticut. I just wanted to add my story to the other stories that have been told tonight on the line. Very, very similar situation. All the elements that we've already heard about were present on my call. I was called at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning, woke from sleep. The person identified himself as a Connecticut State Trooper. He gave me a badge number. He gave me a name. And the same kind of story. I was in violation of my probation or my registry. There was a warrant out for my arrest. I was on the phone with this gentleman for about 15 minutes. Very, very frightening. The frightening aspect of it was the thing. It was incredibly realistic. There was some kind of a dispatcher noise in the background. I could hear someone. It sounded like a police dispatcher 15, making calls and sending officers to different locations. The gentleman that was on the phone sounded very, very realistic, like he was a state trooper. Again, gave me a badge number, gave me a name. He knew my name. He knew my address, my phone number. He knew this thing that we have on the registry in Connecticut called the SPBI number, which is my identification number on the registry. And again, it was the same kind of pitch. There was a warrant for my arrest. I was noncompliant. There was he gave me the name of a woman who had made a complaint about me, wouldn't tell me anything more about the situation. After being on the phone with this gentleman for a while, I was transferred to another officer, supposedly, a different badge number, a different name. He was the first gentleman said he was a detective. The second gentleman said he was a sergeant. It got down to that I was going to have to appear in front of a judge. I was going to have to fill out an affidavit. I needed to come down right away. Then they started talking about this idea of resolving it civilly. The amount of money they asked for me was $3,500. And I got on my computer. I was scared to death. Got on my computer. He mentioned the name of a judge. I Googled the judge. There was no such judge by that name. So I started to get suspicious. But they were going to come out to my house and arrest me if I didn't do what they wanted. So after being on the phone for about 45 minutes, I told them that I was not going to comply. I asked for more identifying information, and at that point, the second officer got very agitated, said they were coming to arrest me, and ended the call. The phone numbers that were on my call logs, one was from Troop H in Hartford. That's where they said they were calling from, the State Police Troop H in Hartford. The other number was a number in Glastonbury, Connecticut, because they did call me once and then called me back later. I called Troop H in the morning and gave them the badge numbers and the names of the officers that were presented to me, and the dispatcher said there was no such numbers. They weren't even real numbers in the state of Connecticut. They didn't go that high, and that she wasn't aware there was nobody by those names working for them. But the dispatcher was not interested in taking any more information about the situation. So extremely upsetting, extremely, extremely realistic, very frightening, especially given the hour of the morning. This was at 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning. So I just wanted to share that with you. I have shared this information with my local NARSO representative that is in my therapy group with me. And I also want to report to the group that there was another member in my same group of about 6 gentlemen who had exactly the same experience. And then finally, the dispatcher did indicate that this is going around in Connecticut, that there have been other situations like this. Again, they're impersonating Connecticut State police officers, which sounds like a very serious thing, aside from the harassment, that they're obviously impersonating a police officer. So I just wanted to share that with the group. It's great to hear the common experiences. And I shared this with my group just so that those fellows now won't have to go through the same thing that me and my fellow associate. If you know that this is a scam, you'll react to it. You're, in effect, inoculated from having to go through the terror and the fear that we had to go through. So thanks very much for the opportunity to share this.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Thank you. That is powerful. We're going to try to squeeze in one more quick call because we're up on the 55-minute mark. So we're going to go to one more person and ask you. You're on NARSO in action. Go ahead.
I was wondering, not necessarily about the scams, but here in Pennsylvania, we're starting our own group of Parsol trying to become a grassroots effort and a nonprofit to service registrants. My question really was directed towards post-conviction treatment and what are the ins and outs. And I guess that's a more statewide question than a federal one.
Can you illuminate a little bit more of what you mean about post-conviction treatment? Are you finding that there is none, or do you find that it's not really treatment? Where are we going with this?
I find that it's really not treatment, as it is aggressive, and
would you call it a collaborative fishing expedition to bring you down? That's what I called it.
Everyone who's assessed has to go, regardless.
Absolutely.
And there's something you can do.
Right, and you have to go until you admit that you're guilty of it, and they still make you go for X number of months. Everyone goes through something very similar to that.
Yeah, in this case, X number of years.
Sure.
Once a week.
Yes.
It's very detrimental mentally.
Yes.
And that's all I had.
Sure, and we're all dealing with it, and we all need to lock arms, and we all need to push back. All of us, all 800 or 900,000 of us.
Yes, absolutely.
So I don't have a lot of faith in the treatment that's being offered out there, branded as treatment. It is really, I've called it a collaborative fishing expedition, and I know that we've got one state in the country, and this is an inside joke that Maryland does it. They're pure as the wind driven snow, but I don't find any other state does that treatment, other than it's oftentimes perpetual for the duration of supervision. It's enormously expensive.
And somebody's chat said about polygraph, too. So throw that on top of the treatment side of it.
That's right. They're required to take a polygraph test and pay for it themselves.
But you have an industry. The treatment providers will tell you that they're doing wonderful work. And the lawmakers, when they tell them, we're having that debate in my state, they tell you that these conditions are imminently treatable. They take 20, 30, 40 years to treat. And they don't say that, but they say they can take years to treat. And they have the ear of the public because they're the professionals,
right? And in the interim, all the coffers, the state coffers, are being filled that way, rather than, you know, saying that everybody has to go. Well, then everybody's going to have to pay. So I think it's an issue.
So thank you very much. You hear our lovely music again, my favorite song. We are going to take a brief time out here for some messages, sponsors, promos for our affiliates, hopefully. And we'll be back. We'll be back on the flip side for the final hour, which will include King Alexander and Paul Rigney and International Bank.
Larry,
you are listening to Parcel.